I'm Casey Lanko.
And I'm Tim Johansson.
And welcome to Psychology at Work. Welcome back to the Psychology at Work podcast.
At work. Yes.
Dramatic pause.
Trying to trick me already.
Well, let's get into it.
Yes.
How was your check-in from your intention from last time?
Yeah,
technically 2 episodes ago.
Yes, precipice of self-protection.
Yeah.
And finding myself in those spots and asking myself about these runaway thoughts.
I believe you refer to them as runaway horses.
Runaway horses.
I like that a lot.
Wild horses couldn't drag it from me.
Yeah.
That's a Anne of Green Gables quote there. Hmm. Said that to Marilla. These wild horses, these predictor thoughts that tend to come up for me when I'm just in this super strong pull to go into that self-protection place. And like checking in on those and asking, how are those helpful?
Now, could I invite you? You introduced a new concept to the listener, predictor thoughts. Could you explain that?
Yeah. And they're these runaway horse thoughts, right? And they're making these predictions about the dangerous thing that's about to happen, or about the intentions of someone else, or about the calamity that is foreboding, whatever it is, right? But they're these predictor thoughts that are saying really strongly, you should protect yourself from this danger that's coming.
Yeah.
So runaway horses, predictor thoughts, sort of the same thing, been sitting with it. Obviously, I've been paying attention to this intention of mine. And I give myself an 83.5%.
Okay. Solid.
Great. Yeah. B minus.
Solid.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I wanted to comment on something that you just said there, though. You said, obviously, I've been paying attention to this intention or whatever.
Oh,
I think you're, I would offer that I think you're discounting yourself there, because it actually does take conscious intention to actually pay attention to what's going on there, because we all have the runaway horses. They happen. And so often when we're not paying attention, when we're not bringing intention to them, we let them take over.
Right. It's true.
So it's not an obviousness.
Well, thank you. Yes. Kind of needed that. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Carice is sick today, so at least I get some kind of therapy from.
Sure. Sure.
Appreciate that feedback.
Well, I'm a professional. My intention from 2 times ago, we were just reflecting on this. It was kind of boring. Not because the concept isn't important. I think the concept is actually extremely important. And that was sort of remembering in moments that multiple things can be true at once. And I think what I was particularly focusing on was that we can have multiple emotional experiences at once. So we might feel parts kind of lovely and okay, and parts not so lovely and okay. And to not necessarily have to pick a side, or one doesn't have to be the right one.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of striking me right now. You said it was boring, but I think it's really, well, I think one thing you said was like, there's not a lot of action to it.
Yeah. It didn't feel like there was anything to do with it.
Right. And I submit this to you, sir. Uh-huh. How often we find ourselves in moments that actually don't require any action.
Well, right. I suppose it's sort of a little bit of my own medicine, because people ask me all the time what to do. And I usually respond.
Yes.
And here I am. What do I do?
It depends.
Yes. So yeah, it was actually helpful just talk that through right now, because in talking through it right now, I realized that is something. Mm.
What you said there, though, like
helpful to remember
this pull that we have to like pick a side, and
and have sort of a singular like, no, it's this.
What camp are you in? What team are you on? Pick a side.
I suppose our culture drives that.
Well, I think our culture plays on it. I think there's a human,
that's right,
element
to it's also instinctual,
needing to know of safety first.
Social psychology has done a lot of work on that.
Yeah,
that we are inclined to categorize and pick a side and do all that kind of stuff. In out groups.
Just a reminiscent sidebar here. That was a class that we took together that I was so afraid to take. Social psychology.
Oh, really?
Not because of any of the content, but because it was 5 hours long.
Well,
I was so afraid, and he made us stay to the last minute.
Yeah.
4 to 9. Probably one of my favorite professors. I really respect him.
You better be careful. You can offend everyone.
They're all my favorite.
Okay.
There's different ways. But yeah, I was really afraid to take that class. Scared to death.
I'm going to use that as a segue.
Wonderful. That's why I said it.
I asked you earlier today, what have you been thinking about?
I know.
Just because I think sometimes when we're, producing the episodes and planning out what we're going to be talking about, we certainly will plan out things in advance. And then sometimes it's like, well, I want to talk about that thing that we planned to talk about. So what's been on your mind? And I think for both of us, what's sort of, actually, I would say with not much intention, we meet a couple times a month with all of the A Deeper Way certified facilitators. Mm-hmm. And in the last two calls,
I know,
we've gotten around with no planning or intention. It's always come back to trauma.
Yes.
And so it is something that I've been thinking about, not necessarily trauma in general,
right?
But trauma as it relates to the world of work and leadership. So we thought, well, let's talk a little bit more about it. And kind of to start, we're not going to get into the weeds on
definitions.
Yeah. And like
stuff.
This is trauma and this isn't and all that kind of stuff in many ways, because I don't think it's helpful or necessary. but to rather, help folks. We've talked about this, as you mentioned, in previous seasons from a variety of different perspectives. But to kind of set the stage for today, I think we should say, there is a lot of really powerful data that really shows two things. One, what's the word I'm looking for?
Prevalence.
Yes, thank you.
That was a guess, but I got it.
That was exactly it. The prevalence of trauma, which we'll talk about in a moment, but then also the impact.
Yes.
And both of these buckets matter.
Mm.
So the prevalence, meaning how many people are actually impacted by it? How many people have experienced trauma? And a lot of the research on this, there's different approaches that psychologists and other professionals are taking in sort of looking at trauma. But I think a lot of research that I think was groundbreaking and remains groundbreaking was the research on adverse childhood experiences.
Yeah.
Because I think, and I could be misspeaking on this, but I'll just say to my knowledge, it was some of the first data to really highlight the broad prevalence.
Right.
I think.
Oh, yeah.
And again, I'm making kind of an educated guess here, but I think before that data and before it even became sort of widespread as seminal research, we kind of thought, trauma is a thing, but we sort of thought of it as, as we sometimes say, big T trauma, like huge right. events that we all kind of recognize as trauma.
Yeah.
And well, that happens to some folks.
We've kind of had earlier notions of it where the impact had to be enormous right. and the prevalence then was very narrow.
Right. And we were able to psychologically have sort of this separation of, even for our own stuff, like, well, I haven't experienced trauma. Right. It felt like such a really big word. Mm-hmm. But what this research, which we're not going to get into, I really encourage you to just Google adverse childhood experiences and you'll find everything you need to about it. The reality is that over 70%. 70% of adults in the United States have experienced some kind of trauma.
That's not hyperbole.
No, it's not.
That's not a misquote.
Then this data is replicated everywhere. And replicated and replicated and replicated. And so let's just start with that, right? So let's say you have 100 employees.
Yeah. Yeah.
The implication there is that 70 of them are likely to have some stuff going on from time to time because of those experiences.
Yeah. Cuts across all different demographics.
Yep. And, you know, to be clear, certain communities, the percentage is greater.
The prevalence and severity is greater. Yep. It's disproportional.
But it's never less.
But it's never less.
Right.
Right.
So that's kind of the benchmark. So we'll get back to that, you know, the prevalence piece in the, how it brings it into work. But then the other thing that the adverse childhood experience research was really profound in showing was the impact. Mm-hmm. It basically, to the degree that you've experienced it, right? So certainly the mm-hmm. more of it you experience, of course, the greater the impact.
Yeah.
But basically, it touches every aspect of your life, right? Health outcomes, work outcomes, educational outcomes, everything you can imagine.
Right.
There's data indicating that the more trauma you experience, the less positive, we'll say it that way,
right?
Outcomes, and even like likelihood of developing cancer,
right?
Heart disease. Diabetes, all of these health outcomes have a relationship to you know the degree of trauma that we've experienced. Mm-hmm. But now getting to the world of work, right?
Right.
Engagement, satisfaction,
yes,
fulfillment, all the stuff, there is a connection and a relationship to the kinds of traumas that we've experienced.
The thing that gets me so fired up, though, is when we talk about this with people, they get stuck on, you're condemning my future
ooh,
to a life of dysfunction, dysthymia, displeasure, dystopia.
All the stuff.
And here's the thing that gets me so fired up. There's only one variable that predicts whether trauma will have that grip on your life or not. Only one. If you don't do anything about it.
Yeah.
Let me put it another way.
Right.
All the research, mountains of it.
Yeah.
The adverse effects are reversible.
Yeah.
It's not a curse at all.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be a life sentence.
Oh.
And when you said that, what struck me there is because there is this avoidance of using that word at work. There's this avoidance of acknowledging other people's trauma and the impact it might have had on them. And I think what's really going on there is it can be terrifying to acknowledge our own stuff.
Right.
right? Because I don't want this to be a life sentence. So that hasn't happened to me, right? Or whatever the case may be. So in addition to the adverse childhood experiences research, which really, every time we present about that, people become fascinated with it. So I promise you, if you Google it, you're going to find some really fascinating stuff. Yeah. There's also a lot of fascinating research around multi-generational trauma. And the impact of unresolved, unhealed, unaddressed trauma from one generation impacting the next, impacting. It doesn't just magically go away.
No. Right? It, and again, to this same sort of point, it's not a doom and gloom only kind of thing. And the one variable, if we ignore it, it gets bigger.
Yes, that's right. That's a nice way to phrase it.
If we ignore it in this multi-generational research, which is kind of in a lot of ways groundbreaking in and of itself, it doesn't just dilute itself out.
No. It really, you have to bring intention to it.
Right. When it's ignored, it accumulates the impact and the accumulative effect. And this is on the genetic DNA level.
Yeah. It really gets bigger. There. And one more piece on this before we kind of get into how leadership comes into play here. A lot of the research around generational trauma, because I think we tend to think of trauma, you know, abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, psychological abuse. Obviously, those are trauma. Right. But trauma also happens on a cultural and societal level.
It does.
Right? War. Mm-hmm. Slavery.
Genocide.
These things have an impact, and the impact spans generations.
Mm-hmm. We were just reading about this, and this is how uneducated I am, but the Soviet Union systemically starved Ukrainian Soviets in the 1932 and 33. Mm-hmm. And the impact of that carries forward.
Right. So what we want to introduce here. Right?
Yeah.
So if we rely on the reliability of that adverse childhood research, which is very reliable because it's been replicated countless times, tends to come in around 70% of people have experienced some traumatic experience in their life. What I would offer to you in 2022 now, it's 100%.
It's 100%. Right? Yep.
For many reasons, pandemic, social unrest, political strife, right? And then, you know, let's just call it what it is, a media system that thrives on making money on keeping people traumatized. Sure. There, I've said it.
You did.
Right? I mean, how many times do we get breaking news alerts, you know, that everything is burning up, right? It's a constant state of trauma. Mm-hmm. And again, not necessarily constantly a big T trauma, but certainly little T traumas, because the hallmark of that is sort of this intense emotional reaction and response out of fear.
Yep.
For your life, for your existence, that it's going to be erased on all of those different dimensions. And there's a bodily response that that the more that happens, the more difficult it is to stay focused on what matters in the moment.
Right.
So all this to say,
it shows up. It's here. Always has been. And what we know about it, the more we ignore it and pretend it's not here, the more it bubbles underneath.
Right. And it really gets in the way of being able to show up as your best, particularly in environments that perpetuate it.
Right.
right? We talk a lot on this podcast about psychological safety. Well, spaces that are not psychologically safe are going to induce, trigger,
right,
relive all of these things and make it more difficult,
right,
to be productive. And so what we wanted to kind of talk about today, and let's be clear, we're not the first ones to do this, but you know, in sort of the healthcare side of the world, in any facet of healthcare, we've talked about trauma-informed care for a while.
Yeah.
And
it
works.
It works.
It works. And it's, quite frankly, it's not even like it's that, maybe shouldn't say this, but I guess at this point, it doesn't feel like earth-shattering or groundbreaking or like I'm going to have to change everything about my existence to do this. It's basically, you know, principles of human interaction that work anyway.
Right. In one of the misconceptions I remember even having as we graduated from a program that gave us a trauma-informed perspective, trauma-informed, fill in the blank, does not mean clinical psychotherapy about the trauma.
Right.
Right.
We're not treating people just because
it's not
we
a
have
treatment.
A trauma-informed We're, lens.
Right. It completely opens up the frame and the perspective that we have about this person in front of me to include so much of what they're bringing in to the room, into their existence, into their experience.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Probably going to say the same thing, but that one for me was like, oh, this is a huge eye opener. So trauma, you know, it was kind of like, why don't we have trauma-informed coaching, trauma-informed consulting, trauma-informed leading, trauma-informed managing? And it was kind of disappointing for leaving the program. And like, we just put it in healthcare, trauma-informed healthcare.
It's really still,
and it really freaking works.
And it's really still somewhat new, really. I mean,
right.
We know quite a bit about trauma, but it's still, there's lots to learn. And so in that trauma-informed care bucket, there are kind of six guiding principles.
Yeah.
And, you know, organizations can operationalize those to the ways, but these six principles tend to be pretty consistent across models of trauma-informed care. And we're going to talk about them, each one quickly here. And you'll notice that when applied to leadership, when applied to organizational structure, when applied to team development, to talent management, any segment of work, you'll instantly see, well, why would you not do this? Quite frankly, trauma or not. Like these are principles that are going to help cultivate cultures where people can be at their best. So,
number one,
shall we? Number one. Now, you'll never guess, dear listener, what number one is. I'll give you 2 seconds.
Tenet number one.
That is correct. The first principle is safety.
Safety
in all forms, right? Yep. Psychological, physical, emotional. Right? A space where I get to show up and I get to have my experience.
Hey, you missed spiritual.
I'm sorry, spiritual. I think I missed a few. But yes, your experience isn't erased. You get to think and feel what you think and feel. And that is what it is. And also get to communicate it about it in a way that isn't disrespectful, dismissive, or again, erasing or abusive.
Yeah.
So obviously, that's safety. Foundational. Safety.
Number two. Two T's for two. Trustworthiness, which is really, I believe, what they say. And how we build that is transparency. So trustworthiness and transparency.
That transparency is a huge deal.
Yeah. that really formed a lot. Well, it was a backdrop for one of the second sentences in tenet number five. There is no trust first without truth. And transparency is really the what we're getting at with that one.
Yeah. And you know, applied to an organization, that means we make decisions with the lights turned on. We show how we come to conclusions. We share information and data, right? And it, again, putting that in the lens of the 70% of your employees or workforce who've experienced trauma, situations that don't feel transparent, that don't feel like the lights are turned on, that feels dangerous.
Right.
That feels scary. That feels like what's going to happen next? What's around the corner? What's conspiring here?
Sounds like that puts someone on the precipice of self-protection.
And it doesn't matter what's actually happening in the moment.
Right.
But those trauma experiences are coming into it. And they're informing how I'm interpreting the situation. And so why not just be transparent and share all the information? I've been trying to learn more about decentralized autonomous organizations.
Blockchain.
A lot of people are saying this is, you know, a big wave of the future of organizational structuring. I have a lot to learn about it, but but transparency is at the center of that, of those kinds of models, right? Everyone sees how decisions are made.
Yep.
All right. Number three. This is important. And again, it kind of speaks to tenet number five, peer support, right?
Yeah.
You know, we've always known, you know, a huge predictor of work success, engagement, satisfaction has a lot to do with relationships. You know, do you have a couple of people at work that you trust, you know, they have your back, whatever the case may be. And certainly having that peer support, and embedding that into the culture and ways that that can develop is absolutely trauma informed.
And I think the flip side of that, when it's not present, that sense of aloneness is so stark.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, what's coming up for me here is, I think it was just in last week's episode, we were talking about that research looking at the biggest predictors of the Great Resignation.
Yeah.
You can see how these lay on to,
oh my gosh, yeah,
as an antidote to those things.
I'm feeling it's like the answer is just sitting right here in front of us, and it's been here the whole time. It's like, this isn't rocket science. It's really humanity.
I had a coaching call, I think it was yesterday morning, with a pretty senior leader. And we were actually kind of talking about some of this stuff. And I was kind of giving her a little feedback in terms of, you know, the difference between asking open-ended questions and closed-ended questions and, you know, giving her a couple phrases to try. And she goes, gosh, it's really not rocket science, is it? It doesn't mean it's always easy.
So
don't hear that.
No, because those predictor thoughts in those runaway horses exist in every single person's brain.
Yep.
And they say, run away from these six things.
Yep.
Number four, I cut you off there.
I was going to say, did we say four yet? I can't remember.
No.
Collaboration. Three.
Yep. It's mine.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know what's happening. You go.
I get the big ones, the big, you know, collaboration and mutuality. So when I think of collaborate, I think of the togetherness, working together, but I just said it, but there's an element of working on something.
Yeah. Together.
Right. Together. Working on something together.
And I also,
labor sits in the center of that word.
I also get in there because collaboration is it's a two-way, right? you're receiving, but you're also contributing.
Right.
Right. So you're not just observing in the corner, and it's not all on your shoulders. It's a give and take.
Yes.
I think that speaks to how the trauma-informed element of that.
Oh, this is very good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to get too far in the weeds, but all or none thinking really screws up our capacity to collaborate.
Never.
Right. Or it's all on me or none of it's on me.
Right. Yeah.
Right. In 50-50 thinking or shared thinking or partnered thinking, 60-40, whatever it is, it's more ambiguous.
Yeah.
Mutuality.
Control.
Yeah. You give up a little control.
That leads us, these kind of work well into the next number five. Is this me now?
If you'd like it to.
Okay. This is, I like this one because I think it fits so well with leadership.
Again, yes.
These come out of trauma-informed care, but these translate perfectly into trauma-informed leadership. Empowering.
Yeah.
Giving people a voice.
Yes.
Right? You can do it. What do you think? You got it. What would you do in this situation? Right. Those are empowering principles that, you know, people who have experienced a fair amount of trauma, not necessarily every single one, but certainly can be common to come to believe that they can't do it, that you know, anything they touch is going to be messed up.
Oh,
that it's all their fault. And
yes,
having a space where they can learn and actually experience in their body that's not true.
Right.
Is really powerful.
Yeah. It's like encourage, like putting your courage into someone. Mm-hmm. This is like putting your, you know, giving the power that you have, positional power if you're the leader, and giving that to that person.
Yeah.
I think a big piece with empowerment that's different from flattery or just lip service is, and it's kind of built on these other ones, right? But when you're empowering someone, you're speaking specifically to something true about their competency.
Yeah.
Right.
Do you know what I think also comes up around this one? And we could probably do an episode on each of these six principles. This idea of empowerment, choice, individuality almost. There's an element of realizing, and I do think this is an outcome of effective leadership, helping people realize that they are their own person.
Yeah.
And you do get to say what you think and feel.
Yes.
And you get to say yes, and you get to say no, which, again, bringing back in the trauma lens, people who have experienced trauma often don't realize that those are options.
Right.
For them.
And it's not to say too that it's, well, you get to say no to any task that's within your purview if you find it to be too frustrating.
Well, no.
It's not that. Right? No. That's not it.
But you get to say, I'm not sure how to do this. I need help. Boom. Right? Those are options that could be totally new for someone.
Yeah. And empowerment says, I believe that you have the capacity to learn how to do this. So let's go figure it out together.
Absolutely.
Last one.
Number six.
Cultural, historical, and gender issues. And I think what six really means is broadening our understanding of the individual to how do they sit within these larger issues.
Yeah, and I hear, and gosh, is there power in this, acknowledging someone's reality.
Yes, yes.
Acknowledging someone's reality. Because again, to bring it back to the trauma piece, so many people who have experienced enduring, and particularly enduring trauma, their reality is often denied.
Yeah.
Right? The gaslighting, that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. You don't feel that way, right?
Yeah.
And this is saying the exact opposite.
Yeah.
Which is, I can appreciate what your experience has been, and I can appreciate
how
you're bringing all of these pieces in.
Yeah. And all we have to do is bring a spirit and a willingness to listen to that person's reality.
It really is all.
What's it been like?
Right. Be curious. Right. Be curious.
How's that shown up for you? Yeah.
Yeah. I was just reading, if folks aren't convinced yet, and that's okay, about the need for trauma-informed leadership.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading something like, I don't remember the exact number, but well over 50% of the workforce is now reportedly actively looking for organizations that do this stuff.
Yep.
That appreciate the importance of psychological safety.
Right.
Not just as a fluffy, oh, that's kind of nice. Actually recognize how it is a competitive advantage. How
it's a real thing. Yeah, this is a real thing.
And we've said this for years, haven't we? That, you know, of course, we don't want to paint too broad of a brush, but just speaking sort of from a social sociologist level, younger generations, and the data bears this out, they're just not going to work for organizations that don't take this seriously.
And they have options.
They have options.
Options.
That's pretty cool, actually.
It is cool.
I think so.
PJ Fleck was just talking about that.
Oh, say more.
Yeah, he's my Gophers football team, my alma mater. He's their head coach.
Uh-huh.
But two big changes for college athletes in the last probably 2 years. Transfer portal and transfer rules have really gotten wide open. And name, image, and likeness.
Right.
Amateur athletes in college can benefit financially off of their name, image, and likeness. This completely turned that institution, the NCAA, upside down.
Good.
And boy, is it on that front. There's no precedent. There's no case law. There's no, and it's just going to take a long time to form. And he said, those are two things that were created for our players and our student athletes. And he said, there's a lot of unknown, but it's for them and it's a good thing. So it's up to us to figure it out.
Yeah.
And this complaining, he'll have none of it. And all these notions that we built up around, well, if they're transferring, it must be because they're a malcontent, or transfer players are. There's all these notions that were formed around it. And
stemming from the desire to control.
So my point with bringing up my beloved head coach.
Yes. For the book.
As if he's mine. It's not. Is if we're going to be leading the people that were, they have more options today than any point in history.
That's right. Yes. Good.
That's the point.
Yes. That is a very good thing to remember. Yeah. Yeah.
And if 70% of the people that you're leading in whatever organization you are in, a football team, Walt Disney, a city office building, 70% of them, we've got to build this core competence of being a trauma-informed leader. Have to. And here's the thing. It's not magic. It's not complex. It's not political.
No.
It's not. It's six things really around how to be.
Yes. And on that front, we'll make sure to put those in the show notes so you can.
Yeah.
And also if you just Google trauma informed anything, you'll find these six principles. Sometimes it's five, but five to six ideas that are consistent across any kind of trauma-informed setting. Well, we've far surpassed our time allowance, but that's okay. Sometimes topics deserve time.
Intentionals. Yeah, you first.
I'll go first this time. Well, now that we have, I think, officially thawed in the north here, my intention is to simply spend more time outside.
Mm.
That's all.
Wow. I had an equally off-topic intention. It's going to sound silly, but I want to drink more water.
Hey, but let me reframe you. I don't think either of those things are off topic. Nature, sunlight, fresh air, and water, restorative, healing, very positive.
That's good. That's good. It is true.
Yeah, absolutely. You
drink more water. You're going to get out in the sun.
I haven't been drinking enough water either, so I'm going to steal a little bit of that one.
And Bud Light does not count as water. I'm saying that to myself.
Kind of close. I don't know. Not.
I can't drink Bud Light
purely, but it's pretty close. I feel like I just heard a joke about. Anyway,
we're definitely not getting sponsored by Bud Light.
No, that's okay.
That was off the table when this thing.
Yeah. But here's the thing. In the meantime.
Yes.
We'll talk to you.
Drive safe.